Hello, OT friends, and welcome to the Uncommon OT series. My name is Patricia Modis. I'm the Transitions OT, and I'm your host. So today, I'm very excited to introduce you to our guest of honor, Dr. Sarah Zara. Sarah has been a practicing occupational therapist since 2002. She specializes in helping people who've had a stroke or brain injury fully participate in their life. She received her BS in occupational therapy from Eastern Michigan University and her doctorate of occupational therapy from the University of Illinois at Chicago. She now works at Midwestern University teaching in the occupational therapy program. Dr. Sarah studies the use of metacognitive strategy, training, and group interventions. She also works with clients who have had a stroke or brain injury in her private practice, Moxie OT. Dr. Sarah's passion for evidence-based practice led her to create the Moxie OT podcast. The Moxie OT podcast recognizes how difficult it can be for occupational therapy practitioners to stay up to date on evidence-based practice. So the Moxie OT podcast is a place for OTPs, consumers of occupational therapy, and friends of OT to talk about the best evidence in occupational therapy. The podcast seeks to provide evidence-based resources, such as research articles, books, and online sources for OT advocates in an effort to increase their Moxie. So without further ado, I'd like to present to you the Moxie OT, Dr. Sarah Zara. Welcome, Sarah.
Hi, Patricia. Thank you so much for having me. I'm so excited to be on the other side of the microphone.
Oh, you're welcome. I am excited for you to sprinkle a little bit of your Moxie in today's episode. So let's start by having you tell us a little bit about your background, a little bit about you.
Yeah, so this is December of 2021, and this will be my 20th year since my graduation from OT school with my bachelor's.
Congratulations! It's a big anniversary.
So I graduated from Eastern Michigan. I grew up in Michigan and then graduated into the post 9/11 recession. So I took off and went to Fresno, California, where I got my first job. And I worked in skilled nursing there, which was an excellent learning experience. And that's where I really learned that working with neurologically impaired clients was kind of my passion population. And then it kind of became time for our family to move back to the Midwest, and we settled in Chicago, and I got a job at working in day rehab, which was just a really exciting place to be to work with younger folks who are going back to work or taking care of their family. But then I also worked for a large hospital system, so I got to try inpatient rehab and outpatient and their pain center and lots of different experiences there. So that's been super great. On my learning journey, I decided to go back to school and I got my post-professional doctorate at the University of Illinois at Chicago. And that led me to teaching here at Midwestern. So moving to Chicago has created a lot of great opportunities for me. And like you said, I've recently started a podcast and a mobile OT practice. So I've been staying busy.
Wow. Well, you've been in OT for 20 years, so you've done just about a little bit of everything. So we want to hear all about that and particularly what you're currently doing. I always talk about, you know, as OTs who have been practicing for a while now and how we evolve, right? And you know, where yes. We don't stay the same OT that we were when we first started. And, you know, our experiences and really our passions kind of help us evolve to, you know, the OTs that we are today. And we're not going to be stagnant there either. So tell us what has brought you or what has helped you evolve into the OT that you are today?
It's funny that you asked that because I just had to do a lecture for some of my students on leadership. And really reflecting on my journey has been all of the amazing people that have led me along the way, from my first mentors at my first job that really encouraged me to, you know, go out and take those CE courses and take on these more challenging clients, to working at the Shirley Ryan Ability Lab, where there were certain expectations put on me that I would join committees and create special projects. And, that was also a place where I learned a lot about research and the impact of research and evidence-based practice. Mm-hmm. But I also wanted, that's where I really thought a lot about what I thought OT research should look like, which is really occupation-based, right? And not sticking an arm in a robot. Mm-hmm. That's kind of the exciting area of OT research that I'm interested in. So that was, you know, all of those learning experiences and opportunities kind of led me to that post-professional doctorate. And then I spent all this time on my doctorate and exploring the evidence and developing new skills, and then immediately went into teaching. And I didn't necessarily feel like I got that opportunity to really utilize mm-hmm. those new skills I had with clients. And so that's what led me to the mobile OT practice.
Got it. And again, I love that evolution, right? You didn't necessarily have it all planned out, but you're professionally seeking other ways to, you know, express your practice, right? And that wasn't being satisfied through just simply teaching. You wanted to actually apply the practice yourself in, you know, working with clients. So I love that we have that versatility and, you know, ability to take on sort of different roles as OTs.
Absolutely. There's no reason to ever be bored.
No. In fact, most OTs that I know have at least like 3 or 4 jobs, right?
Right.
So you also talked a little bit about mentors and, you know, each of these individuals really adding to your knowledge base, your skills, and your repertoire, I think. I completely agree with that too. Have there been any particular mentors that you would like to highlight who have, you know, it seems that every guest of mine has that like one person or couple of people really helped them, you know, encourage them in their path. So do you have anybody in mind?
Yeah. So a couple of the mentors that have most recently, I think, been very influential was, I'll go back to my first mentor at the Shirley Ryan Ability Lab, Susan. They have a formal mentoring program. So that's a really great opportunity to kind of really understand the organization and expectations. But the mentorship never ends when the formal process, you know, wraps mm-hmm. up. Like, I've noticed that we all stay very connected to our mentors and mentees. But so she really encouraged me. She also had a role in their academy, so their clinical education side. So suddenly, now that I've gained some more experience, she was asking me to teach and to take, you know, join these other committees and take on more things. So she really helped me develop my skills. And then a little more recently, my friend Mark, we worked together back there in the day rehab, and then he went to Midwestern University first. Mm-hmm. So he has really mentored me all along this academic career, from writing my letter of recommendation to get into my post-professional doctorate to those, you know, kind of just beginning stages of teaching and understanding our curriculum and expectations, to most recently, you and I, before the podcast, were chatting about how I literally just submitted a grant today to AOTF, and he helped me along that process in a previous smaller grant that I received as well. So those are two of the folks that really stand out. All my mentors have been so meaningful to me.
Well, congratulations on the grant application. Maybe we can segue into that a little bit, because I want you to tell us more about the Uncommon OT work that you've been up to lately. I say work because it's several. And yeah. I think that applying for this grant falls under that category. So do you mind telling us a little bit about that first?
Yeah, absolutely. I'll go ahead and kind of start from the very evolution of this project. So when I went back for my post-professional OTD, I knew I would be doing something that I could implement in day rehab because that was the best use of my time and my resources and my passions. And in day rehab, they do a lot of group interventions. And like I said, I was also working with a lot of these, you know, folks that had had strokes and brain injuries and other neurological impairments, and then were going back to work or to school or to childcare. And so I was really thinking about how can we best support these folks as executive functioning to be able to do these mm-hmm. things. And as I started exploring the research and the evidence, the co-op approach really stood out. So that, along with there's a lot of other coincidental things, it's always so amazing when you look back on how things come together, but that was the same. The Show the Right Ability Lab was also creating its functional cognition program at that mm-hmm. time. And so they also chose the co-op approach to lead that. So I was enmeshed in that at the same time, which was just such a lucky experience. But I started trying to use the co-op approach with my clients in day rehab, and I struggled. It just was not working because those clients that are so perfect for this approach and for all these goals that I was thinking about were always grouped, and I didn't know how to make this approach work in a group. So I made it work. That was my OTD project, was I created a co-op group for adults and implemented it there. So
can you tell our listeners briefly what a co-op approach is?
Thank you so much. Yes, let me do that. So a lot of our listeners might be familiar with goal, plan, do, check. So the co-op approach is a problem-solving approach or a metacognitive strategy approach to help folks achieve their occupational performance goals. So through they call it the global problem-solving strategy. That's goal, plan, do, check. Mm-hmm. And then your cueing or guided discovery as an occupational therapist to help the clients identify their task-specific goals. So, you know, for one example, I had a client who really wanted to be able to go out and get coffee. And so he needed to problem solve, how do I walk far enough to get to Whole Foods to get my coffee? Mm-hmm. Do I need to take my wheelchair? You know, do I need to take my caregiver? Problem solving through all of those steps.
Got it.
So that's the super cool part about it, is it's all occupation mm-hmm. based. And so then they learn this global problem solving strategy that then they can apply it to other tasks. And you don't need an OT then to help you every time you approach a new problem.
Got it. So it's goal, plan, do, meaning actually go do it, and mm-hmm. then check.
And then check, did my plan work?
Okay, got it.
And they have a real specific check, which is cool. You know, like for this gentleman, it was simply, I didn't fall on my way to Whole Foods.
That's a good one.
But I like to use like a lot of like return to work examples, because those need to be a real specific, you know, so that you're not just kind of buzzing over your work and assuming that it worked. So maybe, you know, my boss didn't notice any problems on my spreadsheet, or all of my columns added up, or whatever it is, so that they know that their plan worked.
Got it. No, I think it's empowering, right? It's really, it's all about being self-sufficient, having some kind of a guide, but you're kind of in control. So I really love that approach. So great. So that's one of the uncommon things that you've been doing, is kind of starting this, this approach and this program. Tell us more.
Yeah. So I will get to the grant, I promise. So, you know, I did that essentially one time, and, that was super exciting. You know, the patients really loved the group. So then when I started my academic career, I knew I wanted to kind of keep on this line of research and exploring it. So, and I guess I want to point out too, that there have been several times where I have applied for grants or fellowships and haven't gotten them, but I learned so much about the research process. And I want to share that mm-hmm. because, you know, I just think it's so important that we do see those, you know, fail learns yes. as that, you know, and not just kind of give up on those processes. But I did finally get a small grant here at Midwestern University. And so I was able to, that was a 1-year grant, and I was able to do 2 of these groups in day rehab with that grant. So that was super exciting.
Congratulations on that.
Thank you. Yeah. And again, you know, the patients really liked it. The OTs are seeing the value in this occupation-based approach, that homework is a huge part of this approach. So they're going home and they're doing things and watching the clients take on new challenges that they didn't even write goals for the mm-hmm. group. Like, I always remember this one gal, she just decided to take the bus and go to the dollar store. And she took the wrong bus and she had to problem solve how to manage that. And, you know, just really watching folks feel empowered mm-hmm. to go out and try new things. It's been really awesome. So now I want to keep, you know, all of this has been very small sample sizes. So I have not been able to show statistical significance. I think it'll be a long time before I can, but I want to keep on this vein of research. So I just applied for the American Occupational Therapy Foundation Research Implementation Grant. So because this approach is evidence-based, we can do it in rehab. Mm-hmm. So we're using an implementation grant to look at how we can support the OTs and in using this approach in their practice. So
fantastic. I love everything about it. I love that it's occupation based. I love that it's empowering. And I also love that it's work that you've kind of created for yourself, right? You're teaching, you're doing other things, but this is something that you created for yourself because it was an area that you felt really passionate about and also felt that there was a need in.
Yeah. That's, you know, I think when you see a need and then you're able to, fulfill that need is quite the right phrasing as OTs, but, you know, fill that gap, mm-hmm. I think is really exciting. And that's when you really see folks' passion and energy goes into something because they're understanding the power behind the work.
Yes, I 100% believe that too. Wow. So any other uncommon OT work that you want to highlight?
Sure. Well, we can talk about my podcast.
Yes.
That was a passion project that kind of came out of the pandemic. My husband is a techie guy. He works he's a web developer by day and a podcast producer / live streamer by night and weekend. And a musician as well. So he already had like microphones and recording equipment and all this stuff. And because he was working from home since he's in the tech industry, I could really see that he needed opportunities to connect with others. So that's been just a really fun opportunity. We've reconnected with a lot of our old OT friends that maybe we hadn't seen since the pandemic started. Mm-hmm. And you know, I've gotten to learn about different areas of OT as well. So it's just been a really fun experience.
I love it. And I also, you're intertwining the research piece into your
right.
podcasting too. So again, blending all of your passions together, including your husband.
Right. Yes. And I have to say, like, that has been just really fun for us to have something new and different to talk about and, you know, to work on together. And so
that's fantastic. That's great.
Yeah.
So I've been a guest on your podcast. Can you tell us a little bit about what you talk about and what is the theme of your podcast?
Yeah. So the theme, we're the Moxie OT podcast, and the theme is really evidence-based practice. And empowering OTs to feel that they can be strong advocates for the OT profession because they understand the evidence. That's really my goal. So, you know, it's just really fun to talk to OTs about all the amazing things that they're doing. And then I always make sure that I back up their work with some evidence. And usually, you know, OTs will come to me like, you brought that awesome book to your podcast episode. I'll pull an article or two, and I'll usually talk about something like that after the podcast. And then we'll post just tons of resources on the website for folks to go explore. So
it's great. So you're doing the podcasting, you're doing the research work, you're also doing some community work.
Yeah. Yeah, so I'm also the Moxie Mobile OT. and you know, like I mentioned earlier, I had done all of this work to learn about the co-op approach and to learn about the best strategies to help folks that have had strokes and brain injuries, and then went right into teaching. And again, kind of in the pandemic and maybe wanting a little bit more control over my life, I started this mobile OT business. When I think back too, I've also just been so inspired by other OTs who have become entrepreneurs. I've been exploring that for a little while, actually, because of my teaching career. I have a course, our professional development 3 course, where we really just talk about where do you want to go in your career and how do you, you know, set that roadmap for where you're going. And so I've done like a series of mini interviews with OTs working in different areas for that course. Mm-hmm. That was pre-podcasting. So maybe that was also my first practice in podcasting. But, you know, one of them was one of my former students who like 3 years out of OT school became an entrepreneur, and she really inspired me. And I know, you know, Patricia, I think we met over social media. Mm-hmm. There's so many OTs out there doing awesome entrepreneurial work that it really just empowered me to give it a try.
Yes. It's inspiring, right? Seeing all of these other OTs do what I'm seeing out there. And, you know, I find it super inspiring and also just really encouraging. I know in my generation of OT schooling or education, that was not necessarily encouraged. We didn't see a lot of OTs, maybe OTs with pediatric practices, right? OTs who would have a sensory gym. But that was pretty much as entrepreneurial as I was exposed to when I was at OT school. So I love that today's OT students are exposed to this and are just, you know, really their options have just expanded exponentially.
Yeah, it's really amazing to kind of watch their brains just think about all the ways that they can apply OT in the world. You know, they inspire me every day, so it's great.
So congratulations on your entrepreneurial venture.
Thank you. And you know, I'm getting to do the OT that I talked about doing back when I was a student. I can remember we had to write goals, you know, and it was like, I want to be working in the community with my patients. And as the mobile OT, I can actually do that. I'm in their home, or if we want to meet at the store, we can, you know, we can make it work. I have a gentleman right now who really wants to get back out into the community, and I've got plans to be taking cabs and going to fitness classes and lots of fun stuff.
Oh, fantastic. Can you describe to us, I know you're doing a bunch of different things, but what is a typical day like for the Moxie OT?
Well, I would guess for me, I know I'm the Moxie OT, but a typical day is pretty busy right now because it's waking up early, doing my morning routine. I really like to get my exercise out of the way in the morning, and then going to work at Midwestern and being the professor, and then heading out and seeing my mobile clients after that. So it's a busy day right now, and at some point something's going to have to change, but You know, I think it's pretty obvious that I'm really enjoying all of it right now. So.
Again, this evolution, right? That's what's filling your OT cup right now. So you do what's filling your OT cup right now, and later you make adjustments as you evolve.
Right. And we are so fortunate to have that freedom and opportunity to keep evolving and changing.
Yes. Are there any specific skills that you have gained over the years that you think you use in all of these OT roles that you have?
Yeah, I mean, I think one is flexibility. You know, I think being able to kind of change gears relatively quickly is always important as an OT, no matter what area of practice you're
Absolutely.
In. You know, you have that plan for what's going to work today. And you need to change gears. And, you know, that happens in the classroom. Mm-hmm. And that can be, you know, that's definitely like my least area of experience at the moment. And so that can be challenging to go, well, you guys, this is the PowerPoint I prepared. I'm not prepared to talk to you about that question that you're asking me right now. So that's definitely a big one. I think also just learning to speak about OT to lots of different folks mm-hmm. that may or may not even have ever heard of OT. That's where I'm probably challenged the most right now as I try to market myself. You know, how do I go into a totally non-healthcare environment and share with folks what I'm doing and how I might support somebody that they know?
Yes. I love that because, you know, I guess in the teaching capacity, you're talking to OTs, right, or future OTs. So using the lingo. But out there in the community, it has to be – it can't be ADLs, right?
Right. And even we have to explain what occupation
is. I'm curious, how have you been explaining occupations to your community clients?
Well, I always explain occupations as the things we need to do or want to do.
Yes.
So that, you know, that's kind of short and sweet. And then, you know, you're always kind of looking to see if light bulbs are going on with folks.
Yes.
So I'll often try to explain that my ideal client is, you know, graduated from rehab, but might not be back to some of those really important things
mm-hmm.
like going back to work or, you know, going to their fitness classes or doing whatever it is that brings meaning to their day.
Yes. So where do you get your referrals for your community private practice clients?
Yeah, I would say right now it's 99.99% word of mouth.
Okay.
So, you know, luckily I have really great friends and have created some connections that have been referring folks to me. And that's where I'm kind of like growing next, is how do I find some other referral sources? So I did have a really great experience. I was able to speak at a brain injury support group.
Mm-hmm.
And I did get a few referrals out of that, but I also, this is the community that I'm here to support, and being able to be in community with them and, you know, just join them for some of their meetings and talk about what's important to them has been a really meaningful experience for me. But I'm trying to explore how else I can, you know, get out there and let folks know that I'm there, whether that's through presentations at senior centers, or if anyone has any ideas, please let me know.
Well, I think now that things are starting to open up a little bit more too, that might make it a little bit more feasible too.
Right, right, yeah.
Can you share with us what a typical session might look like? I know you mentioned, you know, going shopping with someone, but yeah, what's a typical session like?
You know, a typical session is not as occupation based as you would expect, because there's so much homework expectation,
mm-hmm.
right? So their very first session, I use the Canadian Occupational Performance Measure, the COPM, to help them set their
mm-hmm.
goals. And if you're not familiar with that assessment, it looks very simple. It is pretty simple, but there's something about that beyond the occupational profile that really helps folks decide what they want to be working on in therapy.
Yes.
And so then the next session, I teach them the goal, plan, do, check, and there's a nice schematic, you know, where they can kind of understand how this is actually a cyclical process. So they, you know, if their check didn't work, that's okay. They create a new plan. And then we start with creating those plans. So they choose one of their COPM goals, and then they create a plan to achieve that goal. So I had a gentleman who, he was missing appointments. Mm-hmm. You know, he was pretty disorganized with his calendars. He was actually using like 3 or 4 different calendars. Uh-huh. So we created a plan to be more organized, which was really just condensing it all to one calendar, which and this is the kind of the beauty of using that guided discovery. I could have told him that, but I'm not sure that he would have bought into it and saw value in each of these calendars he was using, right? But by asking just some probing questions, like, you know, it seems kind of difficult to remember that you have an appointment if you're out, if your calendar is on your wall and you're using your phone, mm-hmm. and just kind of making some observations, he was able to get to getting it all to, you know, one synced calendar where it would be on his, you know, computer and his phone, and letting go of the paper, which I know is, you know, challenging for all of us. And some of us do better on paper, yes. But he was out in the community quite a bit. So that was helpful. So that was his plan. You know, his goal would be like not missing appointments this week. And then his check would be, did I miss an appointment? Yes. So, you know, that's kind of an example. And we did do that in the moment, but sometimes it's a little bit more homework based. Mm-hmm. You know, I had somebody who was working on a job search. So her plan was, you know, I'm going to finish my resume by Tuesday. I'm going to have someone proofread it for me by the next week, creating those plans for how she was going to achieve those mm-hmm. goals over the next week.
I love it. I love that you kind of broke it down for us in the assessment piece and literally through the goal planning. So it's super clear to me and I can't wait to use it. I can't wait to try it. I think this is probably one of the most popular problems I've ever had to deal with throughout my OT career is missed appointments. People miss their appointments for a variety of reasons, crises, you know, memory issues, right? Or just not wanting to go to those appointments. So I think this is a really great way of how, you know, you outline, you know, typically what would happen when somebody would have 4 calendars, because that's just the way that their mind is working right now, right? They feel like they need that many for whatever reason. But really, you know, being respectful of that, right? So again, super OT, considering that piece and, you know, sort of why would this gentleman have that versus just telling him to just stick to one, right?
Right. That, you know, I mean, that's definitely an approach I've tried for plenty of years in my career and it didn't work, you know.
Yes. So. I mean, I know I have my phone. I've got post-its galore everywhere, in addition to, you know, some other ways of remembering. So it's really identifying what works for each of us, right? And then, you know, I love the your consultation voice kind of comes in like, well, What do you think of this? Or what are your thoughts on that? And just helping somebody kind of gain a little bit more insight that way.
Yeah, for sure.
So I love your community-based work. And, you know, again, how you're, I hear all of your work blending in together.
It does. Yeah, and that's the dream, right?
It sure is. And I think once you've been practicing for a while, it just, I talk about this all the time too. It just kind of happens organically. And sometimes it surprises me like, oh, they connect too. Wonderful. You know, and it's as if I'm not surprised, but still I'm a little bit surprised, but I think it's just more an excited kind of way.
Right. It's amazing and probably happened for a reason, but sometimes it's hard to to, and maybe we don't need to know why all these things came and intersected into our lives.
Yes, obviously it had to do with us, you know, wanting, seeking out, gravitating towards right. those things, right? So I love that you're in that place in your career. Are there any myths or misconceptions about any of the current roles that you're in? I know there's many, so you choose, that you'd like to demystify today.
Well, I guess one, I don't know if OTs are having trouble with this myth or not, but the mobile OT is billed outpatient. And so I think there are lots of clients that think to have OT in your home, you have to qualify for home health, which means you have to be homebound. So it is really exciting that there's another option, because I think as OTs and outpatient, we often feel very limited mm-hmm. in that we're working in this contrived environment and not in the client's home or in their community where they're doing the things. So, you know, as a mobile OT, you get to work with those clients who are appropriate for outpatient, but in their contextual environment. So that's one. And I think the other is just like, what is the life of a faculty member? Because I didn't know, you know, and like this quarter, I'm only teaching one day a week, but then I have all these research responsibilities and committee responsibilities and, you know, advising responsibilities. And so the day is actually full. Mm-hmm. But sometimes I struggle with how do I explain that to folks when, you know, when you envision a teacher, you envision them in the classroom teaching
yes.
every day. So it's a little different.
So it sounds like you wear many hats too as being part of the faculty.
Yeah. And, you know, it's again, really fun though. And it is different in that you have flexibility to, you know, think about what committees you want to be on or what special projects that you want to be on and how is your day shaped, versus being, you know, a clinician who, you know, probably you have 3 to 4 appointments before lunch and 3 to 4 to 5 after lunch. And, you know, you're a little bit more restricted by those time constraints.
Yes. Well, I love that your day and your week is spiced up and doing, again, different things. And, you know, you probably throw in a podcast interview somewhere there in between, right?
Yeah. 7 or 8 or Saturday. Yeah.
Somewhere around there. Podcast. So tell us a little bit more about, I guess, switching gears a little bit to salary and money matters, right? Maybe focusing on the community, you know, the mobile work that you do. You talked a little bit about billing. Do you accept insurance? Mm-hmm. How do you get paid for that work?
Yeah. So, all of my patients so far have been private pay, but I have taken the steps. I'm credentialed with Medicare and I'm credentialed with Blue Cross Blue Shield. We know that's
Congrats.
A major provider.
Yes.
Thanks. So I'm kind of looking forward to that next challenge when I get the next client that has one of those carriers to learn that process. And I am a little bit nervous isn't quite the right word, but it feels very daunting to figure out how to bill insurance or to bill particularly Medicare. But, you know, again, we find our mentors,
yes.
right? And I have a friend who she's done it before. And so she said she's, you know, willing to help me when the time comes. So I'm looking forward to that opportunity to learn.
Wonderful.
The next step.
But I love that you have those options, right? Like you're willing to go the insurance route, but then you also have the private pay clients. I think it's important for our listeners to hear that and how you're getting these private pay clients through word of mouth.
Yeah. And, you know, there are folks out there that they just want to pay privately because they want that flexibility of working with you on what they want to work on, when they want to work on it. And you know, you want folks to have that freedom, but then you also want folks to be able to use their insurance that they've paid for,
yes.
you know? So I think that's totally fair too. So, you know, and it's a learning process to figure out how to bill, but you know, there's some really great advice that's been given by some of those leaders in entrepreneurism and the OT world mm-hmm. who say, you went to OT school. If you can do that, you're really smart and you can figure out how to open a business. You can figure out how to bill Medicare.
I love
it. So I thought that was really helpful advice.
I love that. I think that is so true. And I'm going to add that to my to my list of inspirational quotes.
Right.
Can you share with us, I know you've already shared some, or are there any other recent successes or maybe challenges that you've had that you'd like to share?
Yeah, I'm sorry. I'm looking at my notes to think about what I was thinking about before this. But I'll say, you know, one of my other successes or exciting experiences is something totally different than what we've been talking about so far, but I volunteer for the Illinois Occupational Therapy Association and I'm their continuing education coordinator. So getting to know other OTs in a different venue mm-hmm. and kind of support them through, you know, actually you're super smart and you can provide a CE for your peers. You know, that's been a really, great experience. And again, it was challenging. It's challenging to reach out to people that you don't know, as I'm sure, Patricia, you've been practicing mm-hmm. through your podcast and then asking a favor.
Yes.
So, but again, I think a lot of all of these experiences have taught me about networking and, you know, collaborating with other OTs and other professionals. So that's been a fun challenge.
Well, I love that you're even adding volunteerism as an OT as part of your schedule. That's also, I think, uncommon OT work. And I've been connecting with a lot of OTs who, you know, I just never really thought of that as something to do, working as an OT. But I've been meeting right. lots of OTs lately who do volunteer their time within their association. So I very much admire that and also support it in the sense of networking and connecting with other OTs,
yes.
right? That's probably my biggest lesson of 2021 is just the power of networking and the power of your voice, right? And the power of just speaking up and sharing and asking and listening. And I think that that's what's really been the most gratifying thing about podcasting and doing these interviews. It's not actually the actual interviews, but the process and, you know, just the relationships that I'm building with so many colleagues all around the world. Which I'm sure you can.
Yes, I'm just loving these opportunities. I never thought of myself as a networker. And, you know, I do think actually I do a little bit better in the virtual world. You know, I go to conference and I just kind of walk around and look at the posters.
Yes.
And, you know, I have to really challenge myself to go up and talk to folks. So, yeah, this has been just a really great opportunity to, you know, like you said, open up my network to meet so many new people.
Yes. Well, you have so much OT knowledge, skills to share. You are doing so in every way possible. And I super admire that. And I really want our listeners to, you know, understand that this is possible. You can do a little bit of everything to fill your cup. Right. And
right. And do what, you know, do what gives you energy. I think that's something I've been really thinking about. You know, I know I'm doing a lot of things, but they really are energizing to mm-hmm. me. And I know that, you know, not everyone is in a spot in their life or their career where they want to take on 5 bazillion things. But, you know, if you feel like you need that one more thing, choose that thing that is exciting to you and passionate and you feel energized to go participate in.
Yes, because that's going to just elevate everything else. I completely agree.
Right, right.
So, Sarah, thank you so much for joining us today and for sharing all of your OT stuff. Can you let our listeners know, how do we follow you? How do we listen to your podcast? How do we stay in touch if we had any questions about any of the Uncommon OT work that you do?
Yeah, sure. So you can look up the Moxie OT podcast on Apple Podcasts or Spotify, or go to moxieot.com and find our podcast online if you want to see some less edited videos of what we're talking about. You can find us on Instagram, either MoxieOT for the private practice or the MoxieOT podcast for the podcast. So feel free to reach out to me through any of those venues, and I'd be happy to talk to anyone.
Thank you so much for your time and for sharing again all the OT work that you've done over the years and all the new OT work that you continue to do. And would love to have you back again to talk about the next chapters of OT things, because I have a feeling you're just going to keep going.
We'll see what happens. But thank you so much for your time. And it's been so great getting to know you through a co-podcasting processes, and I look forward to continuing our relationship.
Same here. Thank you, Sarah.
And that wraps up another inspiring episode of the Uncommon OT series. Connect with me at www.transitionsot.com. And don't forget to sign up to be part of the Transitions OT community. By doing so, you'll receive my latest compiled list of Uncommon OT practice settings, the latest news on mentoring offerings, Uncommon OT live events, non-traditional OT resources, and more. You may also follow me on my social media pages on Instagram and LinkedIn. And if you love this episode, head on over to Spotify, Stitcher, Apple, and Google Podcasts to follow, rate, and leave a review. I also ask you to consider pledging your support to my passion podcast project by being a patron on Patreon. It is very much appreciated. Sending big OT love. Thank you so much for listening. Until next time.